my...
It's good to see everybody today. It's a really good day. It's a good day for all of us to be here together. I'm really happy to see you. I'm hoping that some of you are happy to see me. It doesn't have to be all of you, but I'm really glad to be here with you. We have a lot of visitors here, and that's always exciting. I'm really glad to have you here with us. Thanks so much for being here. I tried to get copies of the handout given out to everybody, but I know I didn't get everyone. If you want to raise your hand, Dan will get you a copy of the handout if you're interested in participating. There's no quiz afterwards. I like the quiz. I think that's fun, but I'm not going to do a quiz. Come on, computer. Please wake up. You can open up your Bibles to Matthew. There we go. And we're going to move forward there. Continuing a series of lessons, just the theme is Jesus. So there's a very exciting title. But the theme is going to be Jesus as we're looking through different passages in the New Testament today. And I want to look at what does Jesus mean, or what are some of the things that Jesus says elsewhere in his teaching when he says in Matthew 22, 37, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. I just want to look at those three words and think about it. I'm not even looking at the point there in that sermon, but this is a phrase that we often quote and think about, and I have found it interesting when we throw Bible words around a lot, like righteousness or justified, then I ask them, what does that word mean? And we all just come screeching to a halt. I have a really hard time describing or defining the word righteousness. I think I know what it means, but I still have a hard time describing it. I think heart, soul, and mind are easier, but I want to take the time to look at them. Even so, Mark 12 and Luke 10 is where you can find this in the two other Gospels, and it comes from what God said in Deuteronomy chapter 6. You can look at that on your own. As I was finishing up and polishing my lesson this morning, I realized that in Mark and in Luke's account, they both include the word strength. Mark says heart, soul, mind, strength, and Luke says heart, understanding, and strength. And we're not going to talk about strength, but we sang about strength earlier, so we've got that down. I was looking at the Matthew account, and I didn't include that word. So that can be the sermon that you guys write on your own to then preach to me. Let's jump into just one of the most important passages where Jesus, where did Jesus use the word heart? In Matthew chapter 6, verse 21, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. We all know it, but we all need to have these verses read aloud. We need to think about them. Matthew 6, verse 19, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. He continues on about the pull that we feel to the left and to the right. And we need to have a single eye. The eye is the lamp of the body. And if our eye is single, we will know and do the right things. But in this very beginning part, he is telling us that our heart is going to be in our treasure. And watch this, guys. I did an animation. I'm amazed. We have a treasure, and we're going to put our heart there. And so in a lot of ways, our treasure becomes our destination. It becomes our goal. And we take our heart out, and we throw it down into that thing, and it's like we're chasing after that. And are we going to be surprised at where we end up? If we've been treasuring certain things, are we surprised at the destination that we show up at? So what's the difference between having good treasures and bad treasures? Well, if I'm treasuring bad things, my destination, I've thrown my heart into treasures that aren't good, and I'm going to end up in a bad place. If pleasure is my treasure, and that wasn't meant to rhyme, if pleasure is my treasure, I'm going to end up in a dirty home. I'm going to end up in a place that is not nice. And that's just the reality of it. And so we need to put our hearts into the things that are good and right, because that's where our life is going to end up. That's our goal. In Matthew chapter 12, Jesus says, you brood of vipers, how can you speak good when you're evil? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The good person out of his good treasure brings forth good, and the evil person out of his evil treasure brings forth evil. So in Matthew 6, we've taken our heart and we've thrown it into that thing, and that thing is our goal, it's our treasure, it's our love, it's our hope, it's our destination, it's our aim. But there's another thing that we do with our heart. Our heart is that very thing from which we operate. It's not just a goal that we set up. The heart's used in multiple ways here in Scripture. It's the very way that we steer to get to that goal, right? So out of our heart is where the activities come from. And so regardless of whatever my goal is, if I put my heart in a very righteous and holy and good treasure, the things that are above, the way my heart is inside me, what is my identity, what is my character, how do I treat a waitress? That's the classic line, right? When you're dating someone and you go to a restaurant, how does your date treat the waitress or the waiter? That'll show what they are like. Not just how do they treat you when they're trying to impress you, but how are they treating other people? I did another animation. So we've taken our heart and we've thrown it into that treasure, but our heart is the very way that we steer toward that treasure. The heart is the storehouse of our inner character and our personhood. How can you speak good when you're evil? Is Jesus' question. It's a rhetorical question. The answer is, you can't. And we've got to change, and we need God's help to change, and God's going to wash us, and he's going to clean us. But this is the point. If you have an abundance of evil inside you, and you're still trying to get to a righteous result, you can't get there because you're going to steer incorrectly. So we've got to not only have good treasures that we put our hearts into, but we also got to clean out our dirty hearts and have that that cleaned inner character so that we're going to go in the right direction. If we're focusing on the trappings and rather than having a good heart, we're going to lose our first love. In Malachi, they were still bringing the stuff. They were bringing the sacrifices, but they didn't have a good heart about it. And eventually, they brought bad sacrifices. They still brought them. And so we can see how that comes out. And even if I'm showing up to church and I'm wearing the shirt and I'm wearing the long pants and I don't want to dress up or I don't want to do all these things that are the trappings and the traditions that I think are good and helpful and get our mind in the right direction. But even if I'm doing all of those things, it doesn't make much of a matter because if my heart is rotten, I'm going to be steering in a bad direction anyways. Because the reality is, I meant to have that up already, the heart is going to reveal itself. In 1 Timothy 5:24, the sins of some people are conspicuous, going before them to judgment, but the sins of others appear later. It's kind of a depressing statement. He's saying some people you're going to know just how much of a sinner they are. Other people, you're eventually going to know just how much of a sinner they are. Sin will out. Our inner character, our inner heart is going to reveal itself, and we can't really hide it. So we need to think about, where am I putting my heart? As well as what is in my heart as I'm trying to get there. I think that that's an interesting, honestly, mix of metaphors that Jesus uses there. But he also talks about hearts that are messed up. If you look at Matthew 13, I do want to read this section. This is when Jesus is answering the question, why are you speaking in parables? And the answer really is about the heart. He says in 13:11, to you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For to the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. This is why I speak to them in parables. Because seeing they don't see, hearing they don't hear, nor do they understand. Indeed, in this case, is the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled that says, you will indeed hear, but never understand. You will indeed see, but never perceive. For this people's heart has grown dull, and with their ears they can barely hear. With their eyes they've closed, lest they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and turn, and I would heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For truly, truly, I say to you, many prophets and righteous people long to see what you see and didn't see it, and to hear what you hear and didn't hear it. There is this dullness of the heart. Their heart has grown dull. It means it's been made thick and fat. It's a fattened heart or made stupid. Sometimes I love definitions. A dull and callous heart. And so here is a person who has made their heart in such a way that it's fat and dull and calloused. And that's their heart. That's the seat of their inner character. That's what they're driving with. And so when Jesus says, I think it can be a complicated idea in verse 11, to you it has been given the secrets, but to them it has been not. And the first time you read through that, you might go, well, Jesus, that's kind of rude. Why aren't you sharing this with everybody? The answer is, when Jesus speaks, people with dull, fat hearts won't listen. And they won't listen to a parable and try to figure out what the meaning of the parable is. But to those who don't have fat, dull hearts, they will think, and they will try to figure out, and they will try to understand. And this is what Jesus is really concerned about. When we refuse to engage and exercise our heart or the seat of our inner character, the seat of our inner character in spiritual things, if we refuse to exercise that ability, we become stupid. And I'm using the word stupid as comes from the definition, not just my own opinion, although I could. So what are you entertaining and filling your heart with? How many hours every night do you spend on your phone? Do you ever look at the report at the end of the week? Some phones give you a report of your activity on your phone. Or are you afraid to look at that stupid thing? And you'll find out how many hours per day your phone is doing this. And you're just making your heart dull and fat. Or in Mark chapter 3, verse 5, and he looked around and he saw, looked around at them with anger, grieved at the hardness of heart, and said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out and his hand was restored. This was in a synagogue, and a man with a messed up hand is there, and they're kind of edging him forward to see, is Jesus going to do something on the Sabbath so we can get him, so we can nab him? And they're using this man's deformity and his problem and his hurt. And Jesus looks at them, that they have this hard heart, that they're not looking at someone with compassion, but they've hardened themselves to that compassion. And Jesus is upset by that. Hardness. There's a lot of similarities here. Covered with a callous, dulled, blunted, stubborn, obdurate. What a great word that one is. These are people who have just made themselves, maybe the previous one, a dull heart is because you're lazy and you're not doing anything, and that's pretty bad. But a hard heart is something that you have actively engaged in. I don't like that kind of person. I don't like that person. I don't like these situations, and I am going to turn myself off to those sorts of things. So maybe there's a little bit more activity there. I don't know. This actively turning your heart off in a moment that demands compassion. Look, there's a guy beat up and half naked on the side of the road. It's a good thing he's on the side of the road, so I can walk on this far side of the road and I can scoot on by like the priest and the Levite that I am and ignore the man who needs my help. They have hardened themselves. So focused on yourself that you refuse to have compassion on somebody else. We need to turn ourselves off. Maybe we need to turn our phones off. We need to turn our own selves off so that we don't get messed up with this. And then Luke 21:34, but watch yourselves, Jesus says, lest your hearts be weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness and cares of this life, and the day come upon you suddenly like a trap. This is talking about the context here is the day of the destruction of Jerusalem, as well as great judgments in general. And Jesus says, you need to watch out because your heart is going to get weighed down. It's going to be worn out. Do you feel like your heart is weighed down? Do you feel like you have too many cares and concerns and things are pressing down on you and it's just too much to bear? And I know that I feel like that. But what Jesus says in this verse is weighing us down is dissipation and drunkenness in the cares of this life. And so it could be that we are weighed down by anxieties, or it could be we are weighed down by the fact that we just want to have fun. And that weighs us down and dumbs us down and dulls us out so that our heart is not ready for when Jesus shows up. And it could be that you're hiding from pain with pleasure, or you're hiding from pain by hiding in a hole with more pain. And we are making our hearts in such a way that when God shows up, we're not ready in the least. So there's this active heart. We need to put our heart in the right treasure, and we need to steer with our heart in the right way. That means our inner character has to be the right way. Keep ourselves from being dull. Keep from hardening ourselves, and don't get weighed down by the silly little world that we are walking around on. Because we need to love the Lord with all of that heart. But he also says that we need to love the Lord with all of our soul. I like this idea in Matthew 16. You can turn there and look at the context. I don't know if I want to read all of it, but the context is, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then that Christ says, I'm going to die. And the response to that is, no, you are not. And Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan." And then he says in 24 to the end, "If anyone will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul?" We need to love the Lord our God with all of our soul. And the word soul here is the psuche word, and it kind of breaks down into two main ideas of definition. One is, quite literally, it's this breath. It's the breath of life. It's the soul of life that God breathes into the dirt, and now all of a sudden dirt is a person. It's that lifeness that we have inside us. It's that breath, the lifey thing. But it's also the soul as in the seat of our feelings and affections, which is a very similar to heart, which is why, you know, sometimes these words overlap in their meaning. And in this one, what are you going to gain, or what's going to profit you if you gain the whole world but you forfeit your own soul? I don't know if that means you forfeit the seat and the seat of your affections, like that idea of the word heart. I think this is like if you gain the whole world, but you lose your life, what are you going to give for that soul? And what are you going to give for that life? So the heart is the seat of identity, but our soul slash life, and that word is translated, the Greek word is translated both soul and life. It kind of becomes a complicated word. It's who and what we are, our identity, but it's also that something that we live out and we spend and we use. And I'm not going to make this animation move, but I'm wondering if the road that we're driving down, the time of our life, is maybe that's a way of looking at this psuche word, this soul word, because not only is the soul part of me, but it's the life I'm living. It's what I'm doing. My life or my soul is the time I spend with this heart. Or my soul slash life is a very prized possession. Isn't that what this whole passage is? If anyone will come after me, let him give up the most prized possession that we have. And it's not your car. It's not even a family member. It's your soul. It's your life. And so we spend our life with this heart, and we need to give that life to God. That's a very big idea. We put our heart up there with God, and we're steering with our heart up there to God, but the life that we're spending, the soul that we're spending, I almost thought that maybe time or the road, I don't know what's the better metaphor. That's maybe what the idea is here. Look at Luke chapter 12. I love this parable, partly because the man who speaks in it is funny sounding to me. It's a great one. In Luke chapter 12, I'm going to start in verse 16. He told them a parable saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully, and he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I'll do this. I'll tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all the grain of my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and the things that you have prepared, whose will they be?' So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." I think the word soul in this parable is used both as the seat of the character. So the man said to himself, said to his soul, which is, I think, just a really funny little moment. He's talking to himself, the character, his identity. But then it says that God comes in and says, "Fool, this very night your soul is required of you." And I think that's turning more to the concept of your life, right? How predictable is it? All right, I'm my heart, and I'm driving towards God, and I'm driving on this road. And there are things that we can do to make our life smoother and better, maybe straighter, and aimed right towards God. And we've done everything to have the next 40 years paved, and we're dead. Like, our life, our soul is not a predictable commodity. And all the preparations that we do turn out that they're not going to be good preparations, or it turns out for nothing. And here is a man who saved up so that he could what? What was his treasure? Where did he put his heart? He put it in eat, drink, and be merry. He didn't get to have eat, drink, and be merry. And the big question is now, who's going to have your eat, drink, and be merry? What a waste. And so we need to be really careful. We need to look carefully how we walk. We need to redeem the time, the old translations have it. We don't know how long this road is going to go. We don't know how bumpy it's going to be around the next curve. I've done everything I can. Now my life is going to be easy, said the man who found out he was wrong. We have to be very careful about our soul. It is a gift to God, not something that we control. But the word is often translated life. This is just the definition I had from the previous screen. And in Matthew chapter 6, verse 25, therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? This is that same word soul. You could translate it, do not be anxious about your soul, what you will eat and drink. Is not your soul more than food? But when you say it that way, you realize how foolish this world is. Is not our soul more than food? Well, obviously our soul is more than food. But I have to eat food in my life. And God's trying to say, oh, no, it's the same idea, guys. Life and soul is more than the sandwich you're going to eat for lunch. And if the preacher preaches way too long, you're going to be okay. Right? It's more than do you have the right shirt. But we get caught up in, if I have the right shirt, then I will be okay. And God's saying, life is way more than that. Way more than that. We got to be very careful that we don't get caught up in this foolish vanity. Again, in Matthew 10, verse 39, whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. What a beautiful idea. This is life, this is soul. Oh, find yourself, find your soul. Well, all right. You might find out that you're a mess and you don't like who you are and what you see. But if you give yourself to God, he's going to make you clean and great and beautiful. If we give our soul, if we give our life to Christ, that's the way that we spend our time giving our heart to God. If I love the Lord my God with all of my heart and all of my soul / life, things are going to go well. Because that's the way Jesus lived. The good shepherd gave his soul for the sheep, gave his life for the sheep. It's the same word, remember. He can lay it down and he can pick it right back up again. Now, I can't pick mine back up again, but God can help pick it up for me so that I can live again. This is the way Christ lived his life, soul, giving it up for us. And that's what we need to do right back for him. We need to love the Lord our God with all of our heart and our soul and our mind. And the word mind here means the mind as this place of the item, the thing that is the way we think and the way we understand. Your brain, the way that you feel, the way that you desire, where those things come from. It's where your thoughts are from. And it shows up, this word shows up in Matthew 22, 37, and it shows up in Mark 12, verse 30, and it shows up in Luke 10, verse 27. Your heart, soul, mind, the word shows up in those three places. And it shows up only one other time in the Gospels. This was surprising to me. I was like, all right, here we're going to have a big, long section of all the uses of the word mind, and it just doesn't show up that much. But we need to love the Lord with all of the thing that we use to think. If our heart is our identity, if our soul is our life, our thinking part. I mean, these are all intermixed, right? We can mix all these words up. But the actively thinking and engaging and processing and considering thing, that's what we need to love the Lord with. All of our faculties for thought. And we need to not let our brains get flaccid. You need to put your phone down. It just surprised me as I was working on this lesson. I said to Heather, I think this is just an anti-phone sermon. I didn't know. Well, we got to do it. Sometimes we laugh at that generation that just had the Weather Channel on all day, or the generation that has the news channel on all day, and they're all, they grew up with TVs and they didn't learn how to control themselves, and we're going to grow up and we're going to be that generation that the kids laugh at and say they're on their phones for 8 hours a day. I don't want to be like that. We need to engage our mind. We need to think. In Luke chapter 1, verse 51 is the only other time that this word is used in the Gospels, and it's in Mary's prayer after she, as she's praising God because she is going to have this baby. And she says here in verse 46, "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has looked upon his humble estate of his servant. For behold, from now on all generations will call me blessed. For he who is mighty has done great things for me, and holy is his name. And his mercy is for those who fear him from generation to generation. He has shown strength with his arm. He has scattered the proud in their thoughts of their hearts. He has brought down the mighty from their thrones and exalted those of humble estate. He has filled the hungry with good things, and the rich he has sent away empty. He has helped his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy, as he spoke to our fathers, to Abraham, and to his offspring forever." This is a woman who was focused on humility and recognizing her low estate and lifting God as high as she could. And those who had thoughts of pride, she says, God destroys. And we need to put down all the things that are sapping our brain, all the things that are distracting us. We need to be thinking about God. I'm going to look at five other times that this word is used in the New Testament. I think it might be used as much as 10 times in the whole New Testament. It's a rare word. But once it shows up in two passages in Ephesians, and I think this is great. "Having the eyes of your heart enlightened so that you may know what is the hope to which he has called you, what are the riches of the glorious inheritance in the saints, as well as..." Right out, and then a few chapters later, "they are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that's in them due to the hardness of hearts." The word hearts there, having the eyes of your mind, heart, understanding. Some translations use understanding. Actually, most translations use heart, and they're just slapping it right in there. And that's not, it's not what the word is, but it's a great word to try to communicate this idea. Having the eyes of your understanding, having the eyes of your heart enlightened to know the great stuff of God. God has worked this, and he's helping us to turn our thinking on toward him, or we can be in the other way, that we're darkened in our mind or darkened in our understanding. And when we are that way, we're alienated from God because we're ignorant. And again, we got that hard heart. And so what are we doing? Are we turning our minds on to the things of God, the spiritual ideas, the teachings, the great glory that he wants to give and to share? Or are we just turning it off and turning on the next movie or some political argument or some gossip from down the street or some argument with a family member? Because that's just so easy to do, and you don't even have to think hard to argue anymore. We need to turn on our minds. In Colossians, it talks about those who are hostile in their mind, doing evil, hostile to God. That means they are hand in hand with Satan, walking the other direction, fighting against God, having a mind that's hostile. Or even in 2 Peter 3, verse 1, "Now is the second time that I'm writing to you, beloved. In both of them, I'm stirring up a sincere mind by way of a reminder." So Peter is giving us words and ideas to remind us so that we will activate our mind. Without words and without ideas, how are our minds going to be active? Right? We need to hear things to then start thinking things. And we need to hear ideas to then think those ideas. And I need to hear spiritual ideas from spiritual sources if I expect myself to have spiritual thoughts. And so I need to tune in to spiritual places, spiritual readings, spiritual people, spiritual YouTubes, whatever it is, so that I can get my mind activated in that stuff. And that's how we can be busy with that. That's how we engage. So what are you doing to activate your mind fully? Love the Lord your God with all of your mind. You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul and with all your mind. We need to be serious. We need to think, and we need to try to perceive divine stuff, spiritual ideas, the big things of the hereafter, not the low things of the here and now. setting our minds on things above. We need to figure out, well, how do I think about thinking about that? Well, I just need to start thinking about it. I need to read it and try to understand what it means. Maybe having conversations with people so that I'm not wasting this life, this soul. I've got this road, and I don't know how long this road's going to go. And I've got to be thinking while I can think right now. Because it's so easy to think about the stuff down here where the road happens to be. My life is down here, so I'm going to think about the stuff down here. That's dangerous. We need to set our minds on things above so that while we're walking down here below, living out this life down here below, we're thinking about the things above. That's the way we dedicate ourselves. That's the way we take our heart and we sacrifice it to God. That's the way we sanctify ourselves. I happen to be living down here, but I'm not going to talk about the stuff they're talking about down here. I'm not going to engage in those practices and activities because I'm walking a road that maybe they can't even see. My heart is set somewhere and steering me towards that. And we need to give that all to God. Let's close by looking at Psalm 49. I feel like I read this psalm fairly recently. I think it fits pretty well. It's a little bit like Psalm 37 that was brought up during our Bible class about fret not when you're looking at other people who seem to be living the high life. It's adding another aspect to it. Psalm 49, and the lesson will be yours. Hear this, all peoples. Give ear, all inhabitants of the world, both low and high, rich and poor together. My mouth shall speak wisdom. The meditation of my heart shall be understanding. I will incline mine ear to a proverb. I will solve my riddle to the music of the lyre. Why should I fear in the times of trouble when the iniquity of those that are who cheat me surrounds me? Those who trust in their wealth and boast in the abundance of their riches. Truly, no man can ransom another or give to God the price of his life. For the ransom of their life is costly and can never suffice, that he should live on forever and never see the pit. For he sees that even the wise die. The fool and the stupid alike must perish and leave their wealth to others. Their graves are their homes forever, their dwelling places to all generations, though they called lands by their own names. Man in his pomp will not remain. He's like the beasts that perish. This is the path of those who have foolish confidence. Yet after them, people approve of their boasts. Like sheep, they are appointed for Sheol. Death shall be their shepherd, and the upright shall rule over them in the morning. Their form shall be consumed in Sheol with no place to dwell. But God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol, for he will receive me. Be not afraid when man becomes rich, when the glory of his house increases. For when he dies, he will carry nothing away. His glory will not go down after him. For though while he lives, he counts himself blessed, and though you get praise when you do well for yourself, his soul will go to the generation of his fathers, who will never again see light. Man in his pomp, yet without understanding, is like the beasts that perish. Sounds like the people in Psalm 49. The road and the life they lived on was pretty well paved and smooth, had nice lights shining over it, and they had a nice car driving down it. And they had everything they needed. And then they died. And they had nothing that they needed. Verse 7, no man can ransom another or give God the price of his life. We can't pay for any aspect of our heart, soul, and mind. We're in debt. And when it's lost, if I'm already in debt just trying to live and use it, how could I possibly pay back after it's lost? You're never going to be able to live forever, verse 9. We're all going to die. We're all going to end up a mess. Verse 14, we're all going to have a shepherd at the end. The good shepherd, or verse 14, death as our shepherd. But verse 15, but God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol, for he will receive me. That's what we're hoping on. There's nothing in here in Psalm 49 about how to get ransomed. It's just God will. I know God, and God knows me. And that's the connection here. I think loving the Lord your God with all of your heart and your whole, all your soul and all your mind is the path that we can know and trust that God will ransom us. That's what we need to do. I hope that this can be encouraging and helpful. Love in the Lord your God with all of your heart and all of your soul and all your mind. Really easy to memorize. Possibly hard to know, well, how do I do that Monday morning at 7:44? How do I do that on the way to work? How do I do that while I'm at work? How do I do that when I get home from work? How do I? I think if we look at the ways that Jesus uses those words and interacts with others and get all of his teaching kind of wrapped up in our brains, I think it's going to give us a better understanding of just how to set our minds and our goals where we need to go, how to get our steering wheel cleaned up so that we can steer straight, how to devote this short road that we have, and how to be thinking about the right things the whole time. And I think that that's what God wants us to do. That's what Jesus was telling us to do. I don't know where you are in your journey. I don't know how bumpy your road is. I don't know where you've set your heart. But I want to help you. God wants you to set your heart in him. If there's anyone here who needs help with that, or if you have questions about that, or what you might need or need to do in your life, why don't you come forward and let us know as we stand and sing.